Welcome to the Scribble a Dream podcast, where expats, immigrants, foreigners, or whatever you want to call them, share their stories about living in smaller Dutch cities and towns. Hello, my name is Sara, better known as Scribble a Dream, and I'm the host of this podcast. This will actually be the last podcast episode of the season. I don't know if or when there will be a new podcast season. I'm busy wedding planning. I'm also teaching a class about how to find a job in the Netherlands in April, on April 20th. I'm also busy with my business. So we'll see. And we'll see if I'll be able to recruit some guests to come record. So it all depends. I'll probably take a break for a few months and then maybe come back with a new season. So you guys should definitely listen to this podcast episode with Agita. She's from Latvia, but she lives in Maastricht, and she took the train for several hours to be here today. So I'm very, very grateful. Hello, Agita.
Hello. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you for being here, as I said before.
Yeah, I like to travel in a train. It gives me an opportunity to have time for myself. So it was not so bad.
You said that it gives you an opportunity to have time for yourself. Do you have kids or something?
Yes, I do. I have a daughter. She's currently six, and she's the only child, and she takes a lot of attention, and sometimes it can get a little bit overwhelming. So that's why I really appreciate these moments for myself. And I think, as a lot of expats know, it's not always as easy when you are in your country where you have your whole community around you and you can always ask your parents or your partner's parents for help. So for an expat, that's always a different situation.
And your husband, he is Dutch. So does his family live in, are you guys close? Does his family live in Maastricht?
Yes, he is Dutch. They do not live in Maastricht. They live a little bit further away. And yes, sometimes they babysit our daughter, but in my experience, it's not as common as, for example, as it is with my own family when I see my brother, how his kids are being watched in my family by my parents.
But luckily, they are still somewhat there for you.
Yes, yes, yes. They are very supportive. And if it's really something like tomorrow, I have a performance and also Sunday. And then, for example, my husband is away during the weekend and then they are going to take care and like entertain my child. So I can't take my kid to the performance because sometimes it's too long for her and maybe not exactly what she wants to do as a 6 year old to always listen to her mom singing.
I was going to ask, what do you do for a living? But maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it just came out of my mouth already. Yes, I'm a singer, professional singer, singing teacher and a vocal coach. And that's exactly what I do for a living. I sing and I help other people to learn about singing. I coach persons who need an advice on preparing speeches or pitches, and especially when there comes some sort of nervousness or excitement, how to deal with it and how to still keep control over your voice when you are in such a situation.
I'd love to hear some tips.
Tips is actually, it's always practice. Yeah, that's the basic of everything. The more you're going to practice it, the better you will get it. And I like to say to my students that practice is not going to make you perfect. It's just going to make you progress. And I find it really important that every time when you sing or when you give a speech or, yeah, you do your pitch, you just see that improvement, that your voice is getting more stable, you are able to transmit more emotions in your speech. And yeah, that comes with practice. You can't one day wake up and think, oh yeah, now I know how to do it. Even if you, also because voice is a very physical thing in our body, so you can read the books about, I don't know, how to sing or how to give a speech. But if you're never going to try it, how your voice functions, there will be not a good result. So you need to actually physically use the voice to achieve the result.
I appreciate that. I've also been telling people, like some people I know are really shy in front of the camera. And I'm like, when I started making social media videos, I was terrible. I was horrible at it. And also I got some advice to talk like faster in videos. But over time I realized that for my audience, they don't want me to talk at like 3x speed, you know? And it's not natural for me to talk at that speed. So I started, you know, subconsciously, I started talking more in my normal pace. And now people are like, oh my God, I love your voice. It's so soothing. I'm like, I don't think my voice is soothing, but I'm glad you find it soothing.
You know, with nowadays technology, everyone who finds it too slow, they can always put up the speed. Like, for example, I am the person who likes to listen everything at least 2 times the speed because I just like that it's like goes quicker. And but I know that when I'm giving lessons or there are workshops, I know that I need to slow down my speech because the mind cannot just take all the information when it's like being thrown at you, like tonk, 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 million tips at once, and you are like so confused, what just happened? So slowing down, especially when we are, yeah, speaking and trying to give the information to other people, I think it's really important that we can remind ourselves, okay, just go slower. Actually, yeah, the 3 times speed. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's always the best advice to follow.
I definitely don't like listening to things at like 3 times speed. I actually was like listening to a YouTube video a while ago and the girl like was talking so freaking fast. And I had to like stop watching the video, even though I thought like, okay, this is good content, but it's so annoying. Like it's like in her head, she was talking at like 2-3 times speed. And for me, it just drives me absolutely bonkers.
I think it can also be dependent on how you are perceiving the information. I am more visual type. I really like to see things in front of me. Then I'm like very quickly take it in. So I think then when I listen, it helps me when it goes quicker. And then I process it like on my own tempo because I can get like, I can get bonkers and annoyed when I hear someone like going too slow. Then I'm like, okay, no, this is like, I'm just falling asleep. My brain is already walking somewhere else.
I get to the point already. I think that's also with everyone. Like some people prefer people who speak really, really slowly. Some people prefer people who like don't know how to slow down.
Yeah, it's all to the personal preferences in the end.
Yeah, and definitely, like, as Agita said, like, you just have to practice. Like, if you're thinking about starting to create content, or I even had some people who were going to be on the podcast, and they're like, oh, I don't know, like, I'm shy, la la. And it's like, if you never do it, you'll never know. Like, the first time, yeah, it's super awkward. And the second time, it'll probably be super awkward. But as you do it, you know, you get better at it. And it's become so much more natural. Like now I just turn on the camera and start talking. And it's not like this whole big awkward thing. I used to not even be able to record voiceovers in front of my fiance because I was so embarrassed. Not of my voice, but just like the act of recording and talking to your phone. And then sometimes, you know, you have to scratch things and then re-record it. And now I can, you know, do it once in a while, like sit next to him and record it.
I can relate a lot what you're talking, especially about content creation. Because also for me as a musician, especially during the pandemic, when our world changed completely and suddenly, yeah, there were no concert options. World stopped. It was really like a moment when a lot of musicians realized, oh, but actually maybe social media can be an answer at least to something. And it's really like you say, it's just pushing that record button, recording, and then learning from what you did. And next time it's going to be better.
I also find like, I don't like most pop stars because when they're singing, they're not singing. They are singing, but they put on this whole performance and I'm just not there for the performance. Like I really like the sound of like good vocal music. So that's why I really love Adele because I feel like she is just such a good singer. She just gets on the stage, she sings and that's it. Like people are, you know, a lot of people were mad at Rihanna at the Super Bowl because she barely put on a performance because first of all, she was pregnant. And second of all, I think it was because she was pregnant, but I think she might have sung better because she was not dancing all across the stage.
I don't know. I think there are performances where you will go for the show. I think one of the current ones in Europe is Taylor Swift concerts, which are coming. And I think that's really impressive to just see what you can do from a show perspective. And yes, then there will be performances where you will go actually for the musicality and what they are going to tell you with their music, with their songs. And for me as an classically trained singer, I don't sing classical anymore, but I'm classically trained. For us always first comes that message of what you are trying to give with your music. And yes, of course, nowadays we are very visual society, so visuals will become really important as well. But that's like more secondary. Like, you first want to give the message to the people who are listening. You try to touch their souls when you are singing or playing an instrument. And only then you will think about, okay, do I want to build like a whole, I don't know, backdrop behind me with, I don't know, stars falling down, moon coming up or something. Because maybe it can also distract you from that initial message of the music which you are trying to give to your listeners.
Yeah, I think everybody's different. People should just kind of listen to what, you know, they appreciate. Personally, like, I do think Taylor Swift's songs are, like, catchy, but I don't think she's, like, particularly a good singer. You know, just from, you know, I also really like classical music. And I, you know, I've been to the symphony in Amsterdam and in Antwerp. And I do like pop music. I do. And I especially love country music because I feel like it's so emotional. Like, I just don't feel that emotion towards, like, Taylor Swift songs, you know?
I think it's really, for everyone, it can be very different because there will be persons who will be really touched, like you say, by classical music, and you will sit in a concert hall and you will cry. And then there will be the same, you know, who will listen to the song by Taylor Swift and something will touch them so deeply within, like, I don't know, if it's a text or maybe it's some particular music, and they will have the same reaction. And for me, it doesn't mean that one of them is better or the other one is worse. It's just exactly like, yeah, all the time we talk about it. It's for every person, it's different. And like you say, you just listen to what you want to listen. Also, when I look at my students sing all kind of music. I have like really, I have Swifties, you know, they will come to each lesson and they will bring a new Taylor Swift song and that's like what they want to sing. And then I have singers who really love Evanescence and they will like, and that's completely different style. And then there will come also, like you say, yeah, someone who finds country music the best and they want to sing country songs. And then somewhere in the middle, there comes also a person who wants to sing actual like classical art song by Schubert or by Mozart. And it's not that one of them makes like you a better singer or like only if you sing a classical music, that's like, yeah, now you have made it. No, not really. It's more like for me also, it's more about the joy and the message which you are going to portray with your music. And of course, each music style, each song, each performance has a message for a particular group. So if you are able to reach that group with your message, mission accomplished.
I totally agree with you. Now that we've covered your job, maybe we get to the point of why you're here, talking about life in smaller Dutch cities and towns. You did mention that you came to the Netherlands to study, so I assume that you studied music.
Yes, I came to the Netherlands, I think, in 2009. I'm not 100% sure. I think 2009. And I came on exchange program, on Erasmus exchange program to study in conservatorium in Maastricht. I really fell in love with my teacher, like the method how he's teaching and what he was giving me. And I decided to redo the last 2 years of the bachelor again here and then continuing with my master studies in singing. And that was my initial reason why I arrived in the Netherlands. And my initial plan was not to stay here. I had different dreams and I wanted to move somewhere else, especially because at that time I was really very heavily into the opera. And I was thinking about country where opera would be more present, like Germany or maybe Italy. But then in between my bachelor and master studies, I met my husband and my plans changed completely. And that's how a lot of years later, yeah, I think this year it's 15 years later, I am still here in the Netherlands, in that initial smaller town, Maastricht.
Do you regret not pursuing opera?
No, I do not. I do not regret it. It's just, yeah, my priorities changed. And especially also with the birth of my daughter, that was also like, I appreciate that I am able to have my also artistic life in close to my family, that I would not need to, for example, sacrifice my family life for my artistic adventures.
It's interesting how, you know, we have these like big dreams and then life throws a curveball. I was at my sister's house. She lives in Brussels. And two of my sisters, my other sisters, are there right now. I have a lot of sisters. And we were talking about, you know, what would have happened if I didn't meet Kevin, because I always wanted to be a lawyer. And when I met Kevin, I was kind of like floating, not really doing anything with my life, you know, on an eat, pray, love journey. And then I moved to New York while we were doing long distance, and I got into real estate management, but only because someone that my sister grew up with, like one of her friends' sister, was in real estate management. So that's how I kind of got into it. But I never in my wildest dreams thought to get into it. And I still in the back of my mind thought like maybe I would be a lawyer one day, because it's something that I was really passionate about. And I even looked into going to school to be a lawyer and everything, but I never liked school. I mean, I like learning, but to spend in the US, you have to go to school for 7 years to become a lawyer. You have to do 4 years of your bachelor's and 3 years of law school. So it's kind of like a master's or something. And for me, that just felt like an eternity. And also, it's crazy expensive. I would have spent like $100,000 student debt on being a lawyer. So I did work remotely for real estate, and I kind of got into freelance writing and all that. So now I do that. So, you know, we were talking like, do I regret not becoming a lawyer? And I don't. Like, I don't want to be a lawyer. I don't want to spend working, you know, 80 hours a week going through random paperwork. It's just not, as you grow up, like your dreams change depending on your life situation.
Yeah, but I am still, as I described in the beginning, I am still really involved with the music. I have like performances, I have like wonderful students, and there is music always in my life. It's just in a different form. And I think that's also the beauty that, Maastricht, it's not, I don't know if it's a town, if a city. I don't know how you officially...
I think officially it's a city, but a lot of people say it's like a town.
That you kind of, you have a role in your community. And for some people, it may be the only option when they hear music. And also, especially in Limburg, Maastricht is like a capital of Limburg. And we have there an organization which hosts concerts in elderly and disabled people homes. And this is one of the things which I also do. And for example, that's the only way how these persons are actually coming in a contact with classical or music at all. And if I would, for example, continue with my dream, I would never have a possibility to experience these very intimate and very like chamber music performances with a small amount of persons, and to see that the gratefulness that there is someone who is willing to drive to their place and sing for them or play an instrument for them.
I was going to say they probably appreciate it way more than, you know, your crowd of 1,000 people in a symphony hall.
Yes, probably, yes.
Yeah.
And that's another thing where, I can say, my dreams changed, but this is something so full of satisfaction, which I can get by doing this job. And I would not be able to do it if I would live in a bigger place maybe, or travel all the time around. That would not be possible. But in this like smaller community, that opens a different type of options, and your dream just changes the form.
I think it's really important to note that, you know, life may not go as you want it. You know, people think if they're not accepted to a university, or they get rejected from their dream job, or you know, they can't pursue whatever career they dreamt of, or, you know, so many different circumstances. A family member dies and then you can't do whatever, or you have to take care of a sick family member, and people think like their life is over. Or because, you know, you spent 10 years from 20 to 30 or 25 to 30 on one career doesn't mean you can't change careers. Like, you can find happiness and satisfaction in other things, and your career will change throughout your life. And how you, you know, do your life can also change, you know. I don't know what's going to be in the future.
I completely agree with you. Yeah. Maybe in 10 years I'm not in music. I don't know.
And what does your husband do?
My husband is working in, sort of real estate management. We can call it like that in English. Yeah.
I think maybe similar to what I did when I lived in New York.
Yeah, it's like control of buildings and managing several rental properties, something like that.
So he's not like in music.
Yeah, we didn't met through the music. We met through the common friend, but he does play clarinet because in Limburg they have a lot of wind bands, like harmonies in Dutch. And of course, he's a member of one. So every week he goes for rehearsal, plays his clarinet, and then they host several concerts during the year. They walk in a parades, like just few weeks ago in a carnival's parade, and then they play music, and then they have just some other events. Yeah, so there is music in his life, but that's not his main job.
That's cool that he also, you know, plays an instrument. It's cool that you guys have that in common.
Yes.
Do you think you would ever leave Maastricht? Like, what do you think about your life in Maastricht? Because you, as you said, like, it is very, it's far away from everything in the Netherlands, you know?
It's like, yes, it is from one side, it's far away, but I think in Europe, everything is close, you know? I think in America, you sometimes can take a whole day to travel from one place to another one, but in general, in Europe, you can travel almost half the Europe over in one day if you want. So yes, if I look from a country perspective, I sometimes feel that Maastricht and Limburg is like its own tiny corner and a little bit cut off from the rest of the Netherlands, and sometimes maybe even closer to Belgium or Germany, because yeah, we are also really close to Belgium and Germany. That's like really beneficial because I think Belgium is like 15 minutes from my house. I can walk there if I want. And Germany a little bit further, but also very close. So that opens a lot of options as well, that you are kind of in a center. Will I live in Maastricht? I don't know. I am originally from bigger city. I am from a capital of Latvia, Riga. Almost 1 million inhabitants, a lot, like very rich cultural life, a lot of opportunities and all these kind of things. And Maastricht in that perspective is much smaller. And sometimes it feels maybe a little bit too calm. Even I can also enjoy it, that it's calm. But I think one of the biggest things which I really miss, and for that one I'm very grateful that I still live in Limburg, is the nature. Latvia is extremely green country and we have a lot of forests and like nature areas where you can be for hours without any industrial sign. And that's the thing which I really miss in the Netherlands, that in Limburg is not so bad. We have some tiny forests and places where you can go for a walk, but almost always there is industry, there are people, you will see that there are fields, farms, and everything. Yeah, it's just different. And that's one of the things which I really miss from my country.
I think Maastricht is such a beautiful city. I went last year, I think it was like April or something. My friend came from the United States, so we kind of traveled around the Netherlands a bit. And, you know, we did take the train. And the minute we got to Maastricht, we stopped for some fly. Because our neighbor is from Limburg, so almost every time she goes to Limburg, she'll bring us like a few pieces of fly or like half a, you know, a fly or whatever. And it was just interesting. I didn't expect Maastricht to be so quiet, because you do hear plenty about Maastricht. It's not like this city that nobody knows about. Like everyone in the Netherlands, I think, knows about it, you know? So I expected it to be busier with more tourists. Even if it's a small city, like I expected more tourists. But there weren't as many as I expected.
I think the most tourists are coming during the summertime. Like July is the most popular month. And I think also why Maastricht is so well known is because of André Rieu. It's a famous violinist. He hosts his concert series on the Vrijthof. That's the main square there. And that's like, it's really, it's like a public attractor from everywhere. And then most of the people in Maastricht are not happy and they try to escape the city and say like, oh my God, I'm just coming back when these 3 weeks are over and then city is sort of more calmer. I don't find that it's always quiet. The life can still buzz there as well, but it's just different if you compare it to really like more metropolitan cities. Because there is quite a, I think we have a really big expat community as well. And it has two big universities, Maastricht University and Hogeschool Zuid. So there are also always a lot of students. And I think if city has students, it always brings a different vibe and different taste to the city as well.
Yeah, I would definitely like go back, honestly. I feel like I need to... It's such a beautiful city. And I love how it's not like totally Dutch. And it's, you know, because it has all this influence from different periods of time and different empires and, you know, all that. So I think it was really cool to see how you had like one very, you know, maybe like French looking building or something like that next to a Dutch building, because you don't really see that in the Netherlands. Like, I know people are going to be mad at me for saying this, but most Dutch cities look the same.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
But I think at least that's what my husband has sometimes tried to explain me, because I sometimes look and I see all these houses which look sort of the same. He's like, yeah, but it's rules, you know, then your whole thing like looks the same and it's all like nice and there is an order. And then I think like, why, if it's my land, I cannot build a house how I want it. Why do I need to follow everyone, what everyone has done? And it's just like, yeah, those are the rules. But it's very true in Maastricht, due to the different regimes which have gone through the city, you can really see different type of architecture. And maybe people will hate me for saying this one. I don't see like a very typical Dutch buildings in Maastricht. It more like I see different influences from different countries.
Yeah, there are definitely different. Yeah. I mean, there are some Dutch buildings that I've seen, at least. I mean, you live there, so you probably know better. But yeah, I mean, I do like the Dutch architecture. I think it's absolutely beautiful. And in most countries, the buildings look very similar. I'm sure even in Latvia, depending on the period of time, the buildings were, you know, after the war, all the buildings look kind of the same in the Netherlands. And pre-war, you know, depending on the period, they were built the same. And that's normal. But I do agree that you should build how you want, but to an extent. Like, we have some really modern houses here in the countryside, and they are just so fucking ugly. Like, just keep the rusticness of the countryside. Like, how do you have this super modern looking house with like glass windows and just the concrete box, and then you have the countryside? Like, oh, just every time I pass those houses, I just want to like yell at them. Like, you can have a very modern house on the inside, 100% renewed, but have it like be rustic on the outside so that it kind of blends in to the rest of the countryside. I don't know, maybe I'm weird, but
I think it's the same. Everyone has their own preference.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can sometimes agree that then you see like a building and then you think like, did it just came out of the ground here? Or what is it? So
yeah, some buildings are really, really ugly, especially the ones that were built after the war. I understand why they were not built super to be super pretty. Like, you know, financially, they weren't in a place to be able to care about how it looks. But sometimes I hope that one day when those buildings are rebuilt, that they're built in a different style, because those like also those like houses that were originally built from like workers and factories and stuff, they're just so ugly. Like, you know what? They're all attached and then they're all like just not even red brick. They're like cream brick on the outside and it's just no character, you know. But I'm very opinionated. I'm sorry to anyone who's offended. Yeah, but maybe you could talk about some things that you love about the Netherlands, things that you really don't like, and things that are not like typical, because everyone talks about the biking and...
I don't like biking.
Okay, so that's one thing.
Yeah, I'm really passionate. I do not like bikes. If I can, I will walk everywhere. In the beginning, it was a little bit okay, but I think it was also because I was a student and that was the most convenient method of moving yourself between different spots. But then the older I get, the less I really liked it. So yeah, I don't like biking. But what do I like about Netherlands? I think one of the biggest things for me is the ability to build my life in a way how I want it. And that I have been presented with opportunities to really also develop my creative career in a way what suits me instead of following maybe a very traditional and kind of path what everyone expects from me. Because if I would have stayed in Latvia, everyone would just expect that I go work in a school, probably as a teacher, do some concerts and that's it. And here I really see that people are much more open to different career paths, which also often goes away from a conventional path of your career. And what else do I love about Netherlands?
Or hate.
I still cannot get used to the Dutch food even after all these years. I just don't understand how people can eat boterham for breakfast and for lunch. In my country we don't do it. We have a very different breakfast and lunch, and it's almost always a warm food for all three meals, and sandwiches, like something what you will do when you literally have nothing in a home. So even after all the years, I just cannot get used to the sandwich 7 days a week.
What are some like traditional Latvian foods?
Actually, our cuisine is quite influenced from German cuisine. Like, we eat a lot of potatoes. One of the traditional foods will be the gray peas. With a speck. Doesn't sound maybe really appetizing, but it's a nice food. But yeah, we like a lot of potatoes, a lot of meat, grain. We have a really, like, oh, that's also a thing which I really miss and which I kind of hate in Netherlands, is the Dutch bread. I think it's really disgusting because I am used to eating a rye bread. It's a very dark, very heavy bread. If I eat the bread and then this...
Like chorny chleb. In Russian, we have like chorny chleb. It's like black bread.
Yeah, something like that. This very like, thick, heavy. You'll eat half a slice and then you actually feel full. And I can't compare it to the Dutch bread. So I don't like Dutch sandwiches at all.
Very unpopular opinion about the bread, guys.
I feel hatred coming my way already.
Oh my God, what is wrong with her? Send her back.
Or send her bread. That's an option as well. Send me Latvian bread. Yeah.
Do you make Latvian food now at home? Or do you kind of make like a mix of different styles of food? Or how do you do that at home now?
I sometimes will make like a traditional Latvian dish, but I also need to be honest that my husband do not really like it. Like some typical foods which we would eat in Latvia, he doesn't like. And he's only a fan of the fries, but he's not a fan of potato, like potato. He can eat fries, but not potato. And we have quite a mixed cuisine when we eat at home. I like to sometimes experiment in my kitchen as well. So I will cook, something from Italy or even like more Eastern type of the kitchen. But it's not that we only eat Latvian style food.
Are there any Latvian restaurants in the Netherlands?
I don't know about them. I never heard. Maybe. I never really heard of like a Latvian restaurant anywhere in Europe. I know that there are shops who are importing like Latvian things which you can buy, but that's all mostly around the Randstad, like in Rotterdam, Amsterdam, those areas, because they're also the population of Latvian people is much bigger than down in the south.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, the population in Maastricht and Limburg is really low compared to the rest of the Netherlands.
Yeah, I think in Maastricht we have around 125,000 inhabitants, so you can't compare
just
it
tiny
to, small.
People got mad at me that I said that Breda was a small city, but it's all about perspective. Like, Agita came from Riga, which is like a million people, so for her literally any city in the Netherlands is like tiny.
Yes, yes, that's very true. But in the same time, the density like of population is much bigger here, because Latvia is a bigger country in square meters than the Netherlands, but our total population, and if I'm now saying the wrong number, don't throw tomatoes my way, I think is 1.8 million inhabitants. And if you then compare it to the Netherlands, it feels like no one is living there. And that's the part which I miss. Like, I like the bigger city, Riga, big city with a lot of opportunities, but in the same time, you just go outside the board, like out of the city border, and there is basically no one anymore for you. You have like whole country to yourself.
That's really nice, but probably also comes with its own challenges.
Yes, yes, for sure.
Do you often go back to Latvia, to Riga? Does your family live in Riga or somewhere else in Latvia?
My direct family, like my parents and my brother, they live in Riga, and then more distant relatives, they live in a special region called Latgale, and that's like 2 hours away from Riga. Since the birth of my daughter, we are actually going to Latvia much more regularly, because for me it is important that she knows that she's half of her is Latvian, and that she learns about the country, she learns about the culture, and that it becomes part of her identity as well. And yeah, we try to go there once a year, usually. Usually we do it during the summer holiday. And then every other year we try to visit my family also for Christmas time, so that everyone can be then together. Before my daughter was born, it was not so often. Then my parents would come more often to visit me in the Netherlands than I would go to Latvia.
How long does it take to get to Latvia? Because driving is probably, okay, don't quote me on this, probably like a day, right, to drive there?
We normally go by plane, but last summer I actually was so late with buying my plane tickets and they were so expensive that we decided to take a car. So I drove to Latvia. I think if you can drive all the time, then you are there like in 20 hours. But we actually drove to Germany, took a ferry, then the whole night on a ferry. Then the next day afternoon we arrived there, and then we still need to drive towards my parents.
And how long is the flight?
2 hours.
That's nothing.
No.
I was just thinking in my mind when you were saying, oh, we go there once a year, maybe twice a year. I'm just like, okay, when I lived in New York, which is a 2 hour flight, 1.5, 2 hour flight from Milwaukee, which is my hometown, it's also like 18, 20 hour drive. Depending on who's driving, it could also be faster if you don't check the speed limits, if you don't follow the speed limits. But and I'll go back like every 2 months. Like for a weekend, I would just Friday after I worked on Fridays till like 12, 1 o'clock. And I would just go straight to the airport for my job. And then I would fly home to my family. And then I would fly back on Sunday night. And for me, I'm so sad that I can't do that. Like for me, I think like, wow, if my family was like a 2 hour, I know this is not me shaming you. Please don't. It's just for me, like, I think like a 2 hour flight is nothing. So I would just book flights, maybe, you know, you could buy like cheaper flights if you book them in bulk or whatever. You know, I didn't do that, but I could have. And I would just go like every 2 months. So I'm trying to understand like people who live in European countries and don't visit their family more often. Why don't you? Because it could be crazy cheap to fly for a weekend, depending on where you go, of course.
It's yes and no. It can be and it cannot be. Like, the flight is 2 hours, but of course, like, I live in Maastricht. I don't have airport. We have an airport in Maastricht, but it doesn't fly to Riga. So for me, those 2 hours turn also that I need to go to the closest airport, and closest airports are, okay, Brussels, which will be 1.5 hour drive on top of it.
For me too, it's an hour. Amsterdam and Brussels are both an hour and a half for me.
Yeah, Amsterdam is much farther away. That's like 2.5 then. So this one adds, of course, to the travel time. But what I also can really say, that's also, it's something very different how I experienced my childhood, is a Dutch school system that you can travel basically only when there are holidays. And then, of course, most of the time to go, for example, for a weekend, it would not really, you need to be really lucky to get a flight which leaves after Friday, after the school time, and comes on Sunday back before, on Monday, the school starts. Because they are really strict with the kids attending school. And it's not that I want to promote not attending school, but in my childhood, it was completely different, at least how I remember. If we wanted to visit a grandmother in the countryside, during the school week, my mom or my dad would just write a note to my teachers and I would be excused from a school for 2 days, and it would not be a big tragedy. But here in Netherlands, it's very, very strict compared to how I remember my own childhood. And that's, of course, also then puts more restrictions on when you actually can go, because, yeah, you can't do it when there is a school time. And then I need to be also very honest. I understand that flying to America, it's a different price scope, but sometimes to fly in Europe when there are school holidays, it can become really expensive as well.
Have you ever thought about, I don't want you to think I'm shaming you. I feel like this is coming off as like very shaming, but I don't.
Okay, let's go.
No, I just thought like, have you ever thought about, you know, just flying without your daughter just to visit your family for the weekend? I mean, because you must miss them. I'm really not shaming you, okay? This is really not me shaming you.
No, I don't feel that you are shaming me. I have sometimes thought about it, but somehow I never have done it. Because I think I just come back to a little bit again the logistics, then how do... Maybe that's also my controlling nature, that I just cannot imagine that other people are able to take care of my family when I am not there. And, you know, like the whole house will collapse while I'm leaving. It's not true. I have left sometimes for a small amount of time, so I know that it's not true. But I think maybe for me it would be also that wish to kind of stay longer, but then I know that I'm only can be there for 2-3 days, and then it feels like somehow limiting and like really rushed, because now every time when I go home, it's a really intensive time period with a lot of closeness together with the family, and I'm not sure if I would be able to deal with it only in 1 or 2 days. Of course, if you do it more often, then it becomes more normal, but yeah, I don't know why I never have really done it.
Mothers also need their rest from being parents. And I don't know, maybe this is a very Western view, but like fathers should be just as responsible as mothers. I mean, obviously I don't know your husband, but if you feel like the whole house is going to come crashing down, like, I mean, you had a baby with him. I don't think the whole house is going to come crashing down.
No, of course not. I think maybe the difference is also that because I am a freelancer, my work schedule always has been more free. I can adapt a lot of things. So it just somehow became a very normal scheme in our family that I am the one who is available when there are, like, you know, time scheduling conflicts or whatever, because I work for myself, so I can always take that freedom. While my husband, he has like a regular, you know, 40-hour job, and he cannot say to his office, okay, bye guys, I'm now disappearing for 2 days because whatever is the reason. You can always, you know, when your child is sick, whatever, you can say these kind of things. But I think it's just also how our family model that, yeah, I am the freelancer, so I have more of the free time. But I agree with you, it's not that the fathers need to not take a responsibility. And it's, as I say, it's not that I don't go anywhere. Like, even next weekend, I'm going to Den Haag, so they are staying on their own, so.
Nice. Enjoy all the food. There are so many good restaurants in Den Haag. Well, the time has flown by. And again, I don't want you to think I was shaming you. I feel really bad because I feel like the comments are going to be like, oh my God, she's mom shaming her, la la. Guys, there's nothing, like, we're just having a conversation, you know? But yeah, I like when people try to think a little bit differently, you know, like think a little bit outside the box, you know?
I think what's really important to remember, like the discussion which we had in the beginning of the podcast, that you can have your own taste in music, you can have your own taste in architecture. And yes, I can call one thing ugly and you can say, no, this is the best thing which I ever have seen or heard. I think it's the same goes also for other parts of the life. Because I do not think that I'm a bad mom. That's like, I can't leave my child or something like that. Or that the one who is really easily taking trips or whatever, that's like really bad what she's doing. I think everyone has their own preferences. And as long as you are internally living with, you know, your own integrity and doing the best what you can at that moment, it actually doesn't matter, you know, what other people think, because I can't step in other person's shoes. I don't know. Yeah, maybe she super easily, if there is another mother who really easily takes trips away, maybe there are different things which are not so easy for her. And maybe those ones come very easy for me. So it doesn't make one of us better mother, another one not, or one of us better expert of an architecture because, you know, I like this style, or other one a better musician because this is the music which I really like and I don't like what you like. No, it's different tastes, different lifestyles and different situations, and you just can't. You can't compare them. You can try, and we always do it as a humans. But in the end, it's yeah. You take what works for you, and you work with that one.
Absolutely, and at the end of the day, no matter what your lifestyle is, no matter what your preferences are, you should always try to live life to be happy. You know, like don't feel too much pressure from other people, and make sure to stand up for yourself and do what you want to do. Because I think it's really important to be happy in life. You know. And to try to do things that give you fulfillment. Like that is just, I just feel like that is so, so important.
Yes.
Thank you for being here. As I mentioned, this is the last podcast episode of the season. Thank you so much, Akita, for coming all the way out here. If you want to support this podcast, don't forget to follow me on social media at Scribble a Dream. And if you need help with your CV, cover letter, newsletters, blog posts, and more, just send me an email at sora@sorarights.com. I'm also going to drop Agita's website in the description. So if you guys want to check out her website, if you're into singing or you just want to support her, go ahead and check out her link. And we'll see. I'll announce on social media if and when I'll be doing a new season. Thank you for listening.